This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Well, welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, and here's where we talk with professionals about all things concerned with struggling teens, young adults, young people on that. As a co-host today, I have a person, this is her debut as a co-host, Mary Romero. She's from Richmond, Virginia. And Mary, would you like to spend about 30 seconds introducing yourself? What do you do?
Sure, Lon. Thank you so much for having me as your co-host today. I am a life coach that specializes in child and adult relationships. I have worked as a juvenile corrections officer for the State of Virginia Department of Juvenile Justice, so I'm very familiar with this clientele, young teens and young adults. So I am also an advocate for children and seniors. So I'm very, very interested in talking about what we have to offer today.
Okay. Well, I assume you've had our first topic. We're going to talk about a short clip we'll listen to in a little bit. Ken Healy of KALO, which is located on Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri. They work with attachment. For years, they've worked with teenage with reactive attachment disorders or serious attachment orders. And almost all of the kids, it's almost a screening thing now, they're adopted because there's such a higher percentage of kids with behavioral problems that are adopted. And so, Mary, I assume you've had some experience with reactive attachment disorder and adoptions and all the issues that come along with those.
I have, and to the adoptive parents, it can be not only frustrating but devastating to really realize what is going on with the child that they have adopted. And in order for them to gain the proper tools to deal with these kids with these issues can be really traumatic for everyone involved. It takes a great amount of patience and therapy too.
One of my observations, and I've had a few clients that's dealt with that, and the kids have devastated them. There are ones that sometimes no conscience because they've never learned to trust. That's the problem of the basic in attachment, is you learn to attach the first year or 5 years especially. And when these kids are adopted, sometimes they don't learn to bond, so they don't trust anybody. And so they can become very, very, no conscience on that. And it's very difficult to work with. Another observation I've had is that so far as treatment, it's almost the mirror image. Whereas a normal kid that's acting out and manipulative and doing all these things, a regular kid that's doing that and has all these problems, a timeout room might help or some sort of discipline or punishment. That'll backfire. You tell a typical kid, okay, that's it. You go to your room. And they go to the room, and that's punishment and
right.
Consequence. You tell an attachment disorder kid, go to your room, and they say, thank you.
Absolutely. They go with, hey, you don't want anything to do with me, I don't want anything to do with you. That is one of their biggest defense mechanisms to, self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I do have a very close friends who adopted a child who had severe attachment issues, and It was noticeable in her behaviors. It wasn't so much in anything that she said, but it was highly noticeable in her behaviors, in her body language, and you could actually see the fear if she was introduced to someone and she took to them like she did with us. And when it came time to say goodbye, she just fell apart. She couldn't do it. Mm. So this couple, God bless them, they worked tirelessly with her, and she's really doing fantastic now. They didn't get here her until she was around 5 or 6 years old.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah, so she had been through a lot of trauma, abuse, a lot of things that, you know, a newly adoptive baby wouldn't go through.
Incidentally, I forgot to mention in the introduction, for those of you that are listening live on K4HD.com, we have a chat function. It's in the lower right-hand side of your screen. You click on that, and you can ask questions or make comments, and we'll try to get to those and answer them as we go. Okay, go ahead, Mary.
The one thing that I would like to add is that while 95%, if that is the stats for the children I'm having this type of disorder, children who come from abusive homes also have this issue.
They have serious attachment issues, not necessarily reactive attachment disorder, which is the most extreme.
Correct. I'm a perfect example. I came from an abusive home, and trust issue was top of my list. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust anybody for years. And it's something that you really have to consciously, as you grow older, and these kids, even when they are getting help in the younger years, it has to be a conscious decision almost daily of how you react to people. So I think it's something that this wilderness group, I think this is awesome. I mean, there was nothing like this available, as I mentioned to you earlier, when I was young and growing up. And I think had this been available or even advertised more as what it actually is and not a boot camp, more parents would probably have taken advantage of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of parents do. This is something that really didn't start developing these types of programs, and that's a parent choice, which is very important,
right.
Private. And that includes private pay if necessary, and residential, and not based upon punishment. It's based upon love, care, firmness, and that type of a philosophy on that. Now, the particular clip talks about adding a new one. Now, traditionally, programs that work with serious attachment issues or reactive attachment disorder have been worked best with preteens, because the development, child development, is the kid up through the early years are trying to bond and trying to relate to the parents and develop a relationship. Then when they become a teenager, it turns around and they're trying to separate. So when you get a teenager with a reactive attachment disorder, the therapy is helping them to bond, and their natural inclination is to divorce themselves from or back away from it.
Right.
And so that's an important thing. Now, Kayla has been very successful, and I know for years those of us clients, we'd have a reactive attachment disorder, and it was very difficult to find a place that would work with teenagers and knew what they were doing. A lot of places said, yeah, we work with reactive attachment disorders, but then they're doing the same old treatment.
Right.
And they're very successful in doing the teens. Now what they're doing is starting a program for, I think it's young boys. He'll explain it in the news clip. And for the preteens area, which is has better prognosis for success in that. Well, let's listen to see. It's Ken Huey. He's the founder of CALO, C-A-L-O. And that's the word they used. I forget now what the initials stood for. And we'll listen to what he has to say, and then Mary and I will discuss it and see what we think about it.
Let's have a listen.
Welcome to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, and I'm talking with Ken Huey. Ken is the CEO of CALO, C-A-L-O, a program emphasizing working with kids with serious attachment issues in Missouri.
And Ken, could you tell us a little bit about what you're doing, what you've been doing, and then I want to get into your expansion into working with the preteens.
Sounds fantastic. First, I should mention that I am not the CEO anymore. That is now Landon Kirk, my partner and co-founder at Kalo. He handles all of the operations and everything now, and I am founder and senior vice president and handle really marketing and expansion and those kinds of things, outbound face of the program.
Okay, so, I don't think I got a press release on that.
No, actually, I'm just thinking I didn't actually send anything out on that. I probably should.
Yeah, it would help the confusion. Okay, so
yeah,
Mr. Vice President and founder, co-founder, tell us a little bit about what Kalo does.
Yeah, so Kalo is really founded on the idea that we believe in real specialist treatment, and we're only going to work with one small, narrow slice of the treatment pie, and that is kids that have emotional and behavioral issues that are tied to trauma. Trauma in the attachment window especially, and 95% of our kids are adopted.
That's, I see, generally it's a third in most programs, but you have, it's almost always, that almost sounds like that's a criteria for admission.
Yeah, in fact, we do frequently reject kids if they're not adopted. We advertise it with most of those that refer to us as being all adopted, and once in a while, somebody who really understands trauma and attachment will say, well, look, this child really had some severe emotional neglect from their biological family as a child, and that's what kind of drove all of this, and so we'll make an exception and bring a child on that fits our trauma and attachment window, but is not actually adopted.
Okay. Well, you have an excellent reputation for working for those kind of kids. I know when I get a client or a parent talks to me and they have a kid that's been adopted and has a lot of attachment issues, maybe a reactive attachment disorder, you're the first ones I think of. So now I understand you're opening up adjoining properties and you're going to start working with preteens. So what's the age range you're looking at there for this new program, and how is it different working with the younger kids than working with teenagers?
You bet. So, you know, we've worked with the teenagers up till now and had a lot of call for earlier aged kids, the preteens. And so after 7 years, we finally decided that it's probably time to go there. We bought 5 acres adjoining our current property and built two 9,000-square-foot homes on that property. They'll both be done in a couple of months. In the middle of October, we'll start admitting those kids. And we've got one home then slated for the preteen boys, and the other one is slated for a separate preteen girls program. And it's really going to be 10, 11, and 12, and 13 years old, too. We say preteens, but some of those, there's some overlap. Some are chronologically 13, but really emotionally they belong with the preteens. And some, even 12 years old, might make sense in our teen program. That will probably be fairly rare, though. And in terms of what's different about it, really the preteens are a little bit more intense emotionally. The emotional lability is something that you don't see as often in the teenagers. So there's a lot more sort of hands-on, lots of touch, you know, linking arms together to kind of walk around, not in any kind of control way, but they just crave touch at a different level, and we work in those kinds of ways, really rocking, sitting in a dual rocking chair and rocking and talking and being on a much younger level with these kids, lots of sensory integration work that we plan on doing. So that's the biggest.
Okay. Well, you know, I've heard several people say, well, gee, it's awfully hard to work with the teenagers because they've had more time to get in set in those negative ways, and it's easier to work, or the younger kids, the preteens, are more responsive. What's your reaction or thought about that?
Yeah, you know, I think that in general, if you sort of control all variables and make them equal, that you're going to have an easier time with a preteen with the same level of difficulty as a teen. But when it comes right down to it, if you're going to send your preteen off to residential, typically those kids are going to be struggling at a level beyond kind of normal attachment issues. So the preteens are really pretty intense. They're not physically assaultive per se, and they don't have behaviors that put people at risk in the same kinds of ways, but they take a whole lot of staff in order to help them regulate and get them where they need to be. So, you know, some fairly intense kids on the preteen side of things.
Okay, so they're more volatile is the term I would use at that age. But everything I've seen is when you guys came on with Kalo and working with teenagers, it was sort of like a godsend, because trying to find a good place for a teenager with, say, especially reactive attachment disorder was difficult. So good to hear that you're moving into it. These facilities, you anticipate enrolling kids in October. And how many kids eventually do you anticipate in the preteen program?
We have a maximum capacity of 22 in the boys program and 22 in the girls' program, so a total of 44 on the preteen side.
Okay, and what's the size of Kalo right now?
Right now we've got 75 kids in residence, 48-bed boys' program, 32-bed girls' program as far as capacity, so we can have up to 80 kids total, but we've just built up now to about 75. We've actually kind of increased our enrollment cap by building out throughout our existence, and so we're now finally being struck with being limited in terms of number of space that we've got. So,
okay, so the preteen program will be approximately half the size of the teen program.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ken. I'm glad to have the time, had a chance to talk to you and bring us up to date. Appreciate you spending the time and wish you good luck.
Hey, thanks so much, Lon. Thank you for what you do. You really do a tremendous job of keeping the information out there and letting everybody know what's going on in our industry, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Ken Huey, founder and Mr. Vice President of Kalo, and they're expanding into serving attachment disorder kids, preteens.
Small school and small... Yeah, small schools are... Yeah, small schools tend to be, I'm getting some sort of feedback, and that's confusing me. But small schools are important because they can get individual attention from the staff. That's very important. Oftentimes, these staffs have one-on-one. They have as many counselors, therapists, and staff as they do kids in order so the kids get the attention they need. That's one of the advantages of private programs, is that they can do what they need, and since the parents are responsible for the funding rather than some state agency or some bureaucracy, then the parents are very much involved in the process. So it's all a process of bringing the family back together from what's been a very gut-wrenching experience that the family was going through before the decision for a replacement.
Right. What I did, I especially like the idea that they have that one-on-one with each child. In my experience, of course, they've already committed some horrendous crime, and these kids, you've got maybe one or two corrections officers to 20 to 40 kids. The way I dealt with them was not necessarily the way other COs dealt with them. I dealt with them more on a level like what they talk about here with the attachment. Dignity, respect, honor. And because these kids have experienced all kinds of negativity. The last thing that's going to help them is more negativity. So,
absolutely.
So, treating them with the dignity and respect that every human being deserves, I think gained me. It taught me a lot about them, but it also helped them trust me. And they'll be the first ones to tell you who they do and do not trust in a juvenile system. They know who's there to pick up a paycheck and who's there to help them. So with this idea, and it sounds like what I'm really glad to hear is that they're opening it up to girls as well. Because I don't know if you know this, Lon, but statistics are telling us that females are committing as many, if not more, gang-related crimes in today's society. Whether that's poor parenting, whether it's environment, nature versus nurture, whatever that may be, we need to get to our girls as well as our boys.
Actually, the largest growing segment of juvenile justice has been girls' programs. It's been an astounding increase as we change and our society changes in that. So, yeah, you need to work with the girls. And the beauty of these programs is that the parents are fully involved. The parents make the sacrifices to enroll the child. And incidentally, there are programs, a third-party payment that can be arranged, insurance. There's one organization I'm involved with. They're raising funds to help parents that have kids that have the problems and need residential. But the girls' problem are different. They manifest in different ways, but they need that help just as much. And so
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so Kalo has a pretty well balance between the boys and the girls. And when I first started back in the 1980s, most of these programs were about a third girls and two-thirds boys. And the common talk there was that parents found it easier to send their boys away to a therapeutic boarding school than to send the girls. They were more protective of the girls, and maybe the girls were more subtle about their acting out and wasn't causing as many obvious problems.
That's true.
But they've changed in that to where now you're getting, generally, I think it's much closer to 50-50 so far as enrollment in the therapeutic boarding schools.
That's actually good to hear. And I can tell you from my standpoint, I'm going to start advertising these wilderness programs through my own website, only because, you know, there wasn't anything like this when I was growing up, and I think it's highly needed. It needs to be highly encouraged. The information needs to get out there, the proper information about what these programs actually entail as far as their theories on what type of clinical therapy these kids get. People need to hear from parents who have sent their children here and what progress they've made.
Well, the parents are talking. It's the listening on that. And that brings us to our next clip, and we're talking more directly on the short-term wilderness programs, mostly out west. There's a few on the East Coast. And this was a news release. Rick Reeves is the person that I talked to. But two well-known, long-established programs in Utah, Aspiro, and the other one was Outback, combined into a new partnership, and this is something that's been happening elsewhere in the private sector, that people are combining forces a number of different ways. And so Aspiro and Outback have combined in order to give, well, they can better resources. There's a bigger financial pot. They can get the resources. And the kids are still getting the individual treatment. But these are shorter term, 30, 60, 90 days, and they don't necessarily solve all the problems, but it solves, it gets them on a start and direction, and then oftentimes kids go to a wilderness program, short-term wilderness program, and then go on into a therapeutic boarding school or an RTC or some sort of follow-up in order to thoroughly internalize. Now, we have some questions on here, and one question: what do you think has changed that girls are acting up as much as boys? I'm not so sure the girls are acting up so much. Yeah, they are more. You see a lot more of that than you used to.
Right.
But the example I've used is if parents have trouble with a boy, he will get in their face and slam out the door, and if a girl gets in trouble with the parents, she'll go to her room and sneak out the window.
Well, you know, actually, what I've seen with girls, they have become, I think, more outgoing in the way of bullying, the mean girl syndrome thing going on. Again, the gangs, the gang activity, whether people realize it or not, is growing. And it is becoming far more criminal and detrimental to our kids at starting at very young ages, and in communities that where you would never expect it to happen. Kids, I think girls nowadays are, because of the way they, and I hate to put it on the parents, but the way they're raised with pretty much anything goes, let's just talk things through, and, you know, I'll just give them the credit card and they can go and do whatever they want as long as they don't bother me. They don't have a problem with disrespecting their parents. They see all the other girls doing it, and, you know, kids, they're going to push those boundaries. And I think I think that is one of the biggest problems, is that there is no boundary setting in the home. So clearly, when there's no boundaries at home, once they hit the street, it's a free-for-all.
Yeah, and I think part of it is the parental attitude.
Yes.
I think girls are more successful at wrapping their father around, the father in the home, around their little fingers.
Manipulation, and, yes, is a very
big tool. Manipulation. And the mean girls wasn't so much going out and punching somebody in the face. They were destroying their reputation,
right?
Which seems to be is very almost violent in the girl culture. Now we have a couple questions. Do you think it's the breakdown of values and the switch in gender roles, and perhaps switch in gender roles is very confusing to everybody. I know boys are exceedingly confused. What does it mean to be a man anymore?
Right.
A lot of young boys talk about that. And so maybe that's part of the switch. There's a question, what if it's just rebellion? And, rebellion is common, but this goes much more than just rebellion. If it's rebellion, you handle it in the home, or you handle it with a counselor or pastor or something like that. But this is where it goes far beyond that, where nothing works, everything falls apart, and the kid's future is in doubt. And why is it always the parents' fault? I don't think so. We were too easy to blame parents. That was a question. But the parents have a strong influence. If they don't play that role and stand firm and try to be the parent rather than the friend.
Correct.
Okay, well, let's listen to the next clip by Rick Meaves, and hopefully we don't have the technical problems we did the last one. This is talking about the partnership between Aspiro and Outback, and talked a little bit about combining forces to make a better program.
Let's do it.
Great.
Welcome to Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, and it is September 30th, 2014, and I have Rick Meaves here. Rick is the new CEO of a new partnership between Aspiro and Outback, two wilderness programs in Utah. So, Rick, could you explain a little bit about how it came to have this partnership?
Sure. Hi, Lon. This partnership came out of a discussion that developed after I had acquired Outback from CRC, and it primarily was driven around mostly a business decision. There is strength in numbers, as you know, and Outback partnering with Aspiro allows for a number of various marketing synergies, and that's predominantly, you know, where the partnership will benefit. There will remain, you know, an autonomy in between both programs. Aspiro will continue to be Aspiro, and Outback will continue to be Outback. Along its, you know, clinical model with strong clinicians and a strong clinical and staffing model, and there might be some new things coming down the pike, but we're going to remain an expeditionary model with, again, a strong clinical backing. Aspiro will continue to do what they do.
Was Aspiro and Outback, were they fairly similar programs, making for an easy melt, or was it something to where one had some strengths and weaknesses and the others could complement that?
Well, that's the way we're looking at it, Lon. It's complementary. You've got the adventure-style therapy with Aspiro, and you'll have the expeditionary model with Outback.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so the way you describe it, it sounds like, so far as the public, a lot of this, any changes there might be, would be in the background. It wouldn't be as apparent to the parent with the kid enrolling a kid. Is that correct, or is it going to be a little bit more different than that?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be the same. Will the marketing be done separately, or would it be a combination? How much is the partnership going to be announced to the public?
Well, we're co-owners, myself, Rick Meaves, and Aspiro in Outback. And then my role as CEO, of course, is over the Aspiro Group, which now includes Outback. You know, if there are marketing events, you might see on a poster, you know, the Aspiro Group, Outback, you know, so forth, Daniel's Academy. If there are
marketing tours by educational consultants. You know, we might team up on that and make sure they get to both programs. Not make sure, but just, you know, be open to that idea. So that will probably be the extent of the, you know, synergies and partnering.
Okay. So you got involved in this by buying Outback back. So you got into that, and then the this business decision was made. So tell me a little bit about Outback and what you see the future for it. And its place in the market, I guess.
Sure. Outback has, as you know, a strong clinical tradition and has used this expeditionary model. It will remain similar to that. Again, we'll probably add some new age features to it, but there is a lot of strength to, you know, for kids being in the wilderness, removed from all the distractions and so forth. And while it's a small core right now of, we have three groups at Outback, and you know, we'll probably grow a little bit from there. We'll never be a large, you know, sized wilderness programs as some are out there. But true to its history, it'll remain, you know, a pretty personable and medium-sized, if you will, wilderness program.
Okay, well, why don't you describe a little bit of a sparrow then, and some of its background and where it's at.
Well, as is fairly commonly known, it was an alternative to the expeditionary model with this adventure-based model, and they coupled that with a very strong and robust clinical model with, you know, the therapist and the therapy, and it's continued to grow and is a quite strong program in the marketplace, and, you know, they'll continue to operate accordingly, and that's where the synergy comes in as well is, you know, my passion and my calling card has always been about, you know, having a very strong clinically based assessment and intervention based programs, and that's where the fit is for the whole organization, is that priority moving forward.
Okay. So how do you think Aspero and Outback fit into the wilderness therapy business or set in general? How does it compare with a lot of the other ones that are out there that parents might be able to choose from?
Well, there are other programs out there with an expeditionary model. There's also some other models out there that, you know, offer differing milieu-based or program-based pieces. And Outback and Aspero will be, again, complementary. And parents might have an option of you know, more adventure-based or more expeditionary-based. And so, you know, it's a slight complement. It's not a, you know, a market mover or changer to have this. It's not as though they don't exist out there. But they happen to fit well enough together.
Okay, so would it happen to, say, if a parent called Aspiral and the admissions person figured, well, gee, that sounds more like they need an Outback. You'd refer back and forth like that?
Well, only as the referral source or the educational consultant requests.
Uh-huh.
We're never going to redirect from one program to the other program. You know, that's just counterproductive, obviously, to what the educational consultant has sought. However, you know, an educational consultant may say, well, I'd like parents to look at both models. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then they'll educate them on that. But no, we'd never make that mistake of redirecting an adolescent to the other program if one was preferred over the other.
Okay, well, yeah, the parents have the final say, but the consultants have a strong say in that. Okay, well, Rick, thank you very much for your time talking about this partnership. Lots of luck. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking to Rick Meaves, and Rick, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Lon.
Okay, well, good luck in the future.
Take care, bye.
Okay, we had better no technical difficulties in this one. It came through, both sides came through fine. And this tells a little bit about the business side and the growth and the change of wilderness therapy. They're not the wilderness therapy programs now are radically different from those in the 80s or 90s that I worked with. And I have to share one story that, because I visited both of these programs, but the one at Outback, I remember being on a side of a hill. It was a nice summer day. There were some fluffy clouds in the sky. I was laid back and watching the sky and visiting with some of the kids and watched an eagle. I don't know if it was a bald eagle or a golden eagle. Gradually circle around in the air up above us. And it was peaceful. It was tranquil. It was very... just very tranquil and peaceful and therapeutic, healing. It was healing to be in there. And that's a large part of what happens in the wilderness program is the healing of getting in touch with nature.
Oh, you know, Lon, I'm glad you brought that up. Nature, I think, is underrated by a whole lot of people. When I'm feeling stressed or, you know, overwhelmed or whatever it may be, all I got to do is go out on my front porch, look up at the trees, at the sky, at the birds, watch the nature. I'm blessed with having deer come into my backyard and eat my shrubs. There's just something about being in nature that truly can clear your mind, can clear your body, can bring you to a place, whether it's spiritual or it's very self-serving, but also allows you to be very open to everything that's going on around you when you are still. You know, I think it's that stillness. And you don't have all the distractions going on, which is a lot of what these wilderness programs provide. There are no outside distractions, you know, as in friends calling, mom and dad being in the middle of something, you know, school or whatever.
Or don't forget iPads, Facebook, and smartphones.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. yeah, none of that allowed. What I did like that... Mr. Reeves mentioned was that not only with Outback were they going to stick with the expeditionary model, but they were going to integrate some new age things into there as well. And I'm hoping that new age to me would be mindfulness, you know, things that are we turn to our inner self instead of everything being about our outer self. So that these kids get to know themselves, gain self-confidence, self-esteem, self-respect, so that they can then in turn, you know, we give out what we receive back what we put out.
Yeah, well, the nature is very important, and I agree with you that all too often underrated. There is one owner of a program, a PhD psychologist, that would tell people, well, the success of the program comes 80% from nature and 20% from the therapist. The therapists are a key ingredient. Well, we have one question on here. I guess we've got a critic, just a money thing, more money. Well, part of my reaction to that is that, well, the public programs that oftentimes do not work very well oftentimes cost the taxpayers more. And the second is if the parents buy it, the parents have the say. And parents are influential. If the parents don't have that role, then the parent involvement is optional. Parents can, some programs are considered, in public programs, are considered a bother. So on that. Well, we have time for a quick break, a one-minute break for a public service announcement. Saving Teens is an organization that's raising money to help parents without the financial means to afford some of these therapeutic boarding schools or wilderness therapy programs.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org.
Okay, that's a very good organization. Full disclosure, I'm on the board. I've been helping them develop it. But the whole idea is to make sure that parents don't have the money can can afford and get their kid the help they need. And they have many, many outstanding success stories.
Can I add just one little snippet there?
Today,
absolutely. Today is Giving Tuesday. Today would be a wonderful time for people to get on and donate. Every little bit counts, because there are so many kids in need out there. So this would be a great Christmas gift, not to many children, but to even donate in a child's name or someone's name that, you know, maybe a lost loved one who would be agreeable to that.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because Saving Teens does have is participating in Saving Tuesday at the end of the year fundraising, so they can afford to finance more kids.
That's all.
Well, we have just enough time to listen to the next clip. This is Kathy Rex. She has been involved. I've known her for 10, 20 years working working in wilderness programs. And she's starting a brand new startup, which has been pretty successful. When I interviewed her, they were just enrolling their first kids. I think they have several more now. And so let's hear from Kathy Rex.
Yes.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, and it is September 29th, 2014, and I'm talking with Kathy Rex. Kathy has just founded a new wilderness called Blue Fire Wilderness in southern Idaho. And Kathy, welcome to have you here, and I hope things are going well.
Thank you, Lon. I am really honored to be a part of this show and be speaking with you right now, so thank you.
Okay. Well, what's different about Blue Fire than other wilderness? There's a bunch of wilderness programs out there that both you and I know about. So what do you see is different about, or what you're trying to do that's different with Blue Fire?
Yeah, absolutely. What we are really trying to accomplish with Blue Fire is to have a variety of experiences for our clients and our families. Everything from the clinical work that our therapists are doing, from the adventures that we're going on, whether it's equine therapy or recreation therapy, incorporating some of the traditional wilderness skills that wilderness therapy was based upon. And so really taking those three avenues as the basis for the program and using that to set us apart from what others are doing.
Okay. It sounds like it's a base camp then rather than an expedition type.
We are a base camp, yes. So one of my initial kind of dreams, if you will, was when kids come to wilderness, they're scared, they're nervous, and we wanted to do as much as we could to alleviate their nerves. And so one of those very specific things is to bring them into the program, and they live in a yurt stationary facility 3 days out of the week, which is equipped with cots and a, you know, roof over their head, picnic shelter. So it just kind of takes away that anxiety and angst that sometimes keeps kids on edge. And, you know, we have found through our years of experience that when you just relate to a child and, you know, keeping them comfortable is okay. It's not a taboo in the wilderness setting. And so we've accomplished that.
What kind of kids would you think would be best suited or you could do, you would be stronger with than, say, the more typical wilderness program?
I actually think we do really well with all kinds of kids. Mm-hmm. I do. I think we do very well with that oppositional, defiant, you know, older boy. I think we do very well with our experiential activities with the kids that are struggling with learning issues, and definitely those who struggle with self-esteem and low confidence, just being outside and exploring who they are as a person through a lot of different avenues. It's a well-rounded program for most people. Where it becomes a little bit more problematic, I would say, is if there needs to be a higher level of structure and buildings, if you will, for kids that might be kind of rebelling against the system. And, you know, sometimes there are just kids that need walls around them to help with their safety.
Okay. Well, what's your age range?
Sure. Our age range currently is 13 to 17. Mm-hmm. And we are single gendered. However, we do have girl groups and boy groups.
Do you have co-ed groups also, or is it all?
We do not have co-ed groups.
Okay,
no.
Okay, so it's all. So basically, you're a single
yep.
gender, single sex.
We are.
Program.
Yeah.
Okay, that
yeah.
sounds good.
Yes, we are.
Well, let's see. You're located in South Idaho. What isn't that fairly close to Sun Valley? or not Sun Valley?
Yeah, we are pretty close. We are located smack dab in South Central Idaho, so we are about an hour and a half away from Boise. We are about 45 minutes away from Sun Valley, and that was actually a really unique aspect to Lawn. When I was given the opportunity to start a program, location was the first question we asked ourselves. And right here where I've been for 20 years is just on the edge of so many different variety of beautiful wilderness landscapes. We have the Snake River Canyon just with the slow-moving river coming through our area. We have the beautiful Sawtooth Mountains that are just, you know, world known, and people travel from everywhere to enjoy them year-round. We, of course, have the desert landscape. And then we have, you know, City of Rocks, a climbing area within an hour and a half of our facility that is just world-class climbing that we hope to take our kids to from time to time.
Well, yeah.
So it was that variety. Yeah, it's that variety of landscape.
That sounds great. Where do I sign up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Anytime. We are open and we are accepting applications as we speak. We're very excited to provide this program to kids and families.
Okay. Well, I understand you enrolled your first kid, and so this is pretty new. And then you got a couple more in the pipeline, and inquiries, I presume, coming in.
Yeah, we do. We have a good flow of inquiries coming in. Reed Treadaway, our admissions director, has been pretty busy for the last month fielding calls and talking to families. And John Warbitz, our therapist, has been pretty busy on the road visiting with many professionals around the country. So, yeah, we're very ready and very excited.
Okay. Well, how long is the typical program that kids typically are there? Do you plan?
Yeah, that is a really good question. Our length of stay, we are being really careful not to say this short or this long, just because I know that's something right now within our field of work that's everything is so specialized. We do, and then I'll follow that up by saying we do have a program model that follows a 6-week model, but we very much expect that many of our clients will be staying 8 to 10 weeks. But we've also got a really unique ability to work with shorter-term clients. If they've been to wilderness, they're in their boarding schools, and just kind of need another experience just to help clear their head. And so it's very flexible. A kid coming from home, we're probably looking at an 8 to 10 week stay, just so we can really get a good assessment on them.
Yeah, that's good to have that kind of flexibility. I know when they first mm-hmm. started, way back when, 3 weeks was the standard, and I found mm-hmm. that fit my needs. Mm-hmm. And I think some kids, like the boarding school kids you're talking about, 3 weeks, that gets their mm-hmm. attention, gets them going in the right mm-hmm. direction, and then they're ready to move on to something, something more long-term. Well, you mentioned the wilderness skills. Now, originally in this... wilderness program hit the news with the survival type of things and expedition bases. So how have you evolved? What sort of wilderness skills do you still teach and use, and what ones have you perhaps dropped off as not being as effective?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I really appreciate the hybrid of a program we've created, where at our base camps, we are focusing on kind of self-care and skills, and we are definitely teaching how to make primitive fire in many different ways. And in fact, that was a core aspect of the name of our program, which is Blue Fire. The blue fire is the hardest part of the fire, which to me represents the core of the human being, which we hope to guide these teens in discovering that. And so absolutely we are teaching fire, and so that is one of the main primitive skills that we are teaching. But our kids are able to learn how to make fire in a variety of different ways, whether it's spark rock or bow drill or pump drill. There are so many different ways. And other than that, the primitive skills really are more an exploration of learning and arts and crafts rather than something that they have to learn to progress through the program. And in fact, the further along kids are in our program, the more skills that they are able to learn because they want to learn them. And so the wilderness skills themselves, we have held on to the fire, and we have very much held on to hiking as that premise of kind of that quiet time and personal introspection. And then coupled in there is the excursions out, our 4-day excursions out to different parts of the state to participate in different adventure activities. And so we'll go through an educational training couple of days with our groups before we head out to do our climbing, to do our canoeing. In the wintertime, we'll be snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. And then also, once a week, we do have a very regimented schedule with our equine therapy, just because we believe so much in the power of that work with a therapist and a horse, and really, you know, plan to use that as a way to track the progress of our clients.
Okay, well, that sounds great, and I like that metaphor of the blue fire. I'm glad you explained that, and I hope you get putting that little story on your mm-hmm. on your promotional literature, because I think it captured my imagination. Well, I want to mm-hmm. thank you very much, Kathy. Thank you for your time and explaining a little bit about Blue Fire Wilderness.
Oh, you bet. Thank you again, Lon. I really appreciate the time you've given us.
Okay, well, you're more than welcome. And this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we're talking with Kathy Rex of Blue Fire Wilderness, a new program in southern or south central Idaho that are just starting to enroll children.
But we're just about out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. And Mary, do you want to take a few seconds and give your webpage if anybody wanted to get a hold of you?
Sure. If anybody wants to find me, they can go to MMM, as in Mary, CCONNELL, .wix.livelifecoaching. Even if they Google me, they'll find me anyway. Just Live Life Coaching with Mary Romero.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mary, and thank you for helping and going through. And the listeners, I hope you're good sports and that you get something out of this. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. And be sure to come back next time when we won't have these kind of technical difficulties.
Thanks so much for having me, Lon.
You're welcome.